Hi, this is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was Congressman Danny Davis, who represents the west side, west suburbs of Chicago, and has more hospitals in his district than any other Illinois federal representative. Congressman Davis is also former alderman, county commissioner, and has been in the Congress since 1996. He serves on the Ways and Means Committee, and he got the audience rocking when he says that the Ways and Means Committee at times is more talk and not enough action. He's also a deacon, and he introduced a lot of religious themes in his talk. He felt that we live in a great big world, and the current administration doesn't realize that, referring to the Trump administration. And he also believes that the Democratic Party didn't work hard enough in the election, particularly in urban areas, to elect Hillary Clinton. He's very interested in health care, providing more assistance to veterans, and also many, many people in his district have prison records or have been arrested many times, and he says we must come to grips with poverty and provide education and jobs. If not, violence will increase. His reason for being in public service, because he's not ready to retire, even though he's 60 years old. He said, I want to be a molder of society and not a moldy.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And, you know, being a politician, I was just thinking that usually if I get applause at the end of a presentation, I call that charity. Means that the audience is being kind. But if I get something in the middle of the presentation, I usually call that hope. It usually means that the audience is hoping that the second half is better than the first half. But if I get something before the presentation, then I call that faith. And I guess faith is what we need to have in our country. Faith is what we need a good dose of in our city. Faith is what we really need to have in our world. And so I thank you all for that applause. I am delighted to be here for a number of reasons. And I can't help but be mindful of the fact that some people that we were accustomed to, the good doctor and Jay Doherty, for many, many years as stimulators, activators, and some people wondered what was going to happen to the City Club as they left. Kind of like the children of Israel were when Moses died. They were wondering what was going to happen to their plight. But then I understand that the good Lord spoke to Joshua and say, Joshua, my servant Moses is dead. And you really shouldn't expect to have any man with you for all of your days. So what I want you to do is gather up the children of Israel and go on to the promised land. So Ed, I don't know if you're going to lead us to the promised land or not. but you're certainly keeping the tradition of the City Club alive and well, where interested people come together and discuss issues and talk about things and enjoy each other and leave stimulated, activated, and sometimes even motivated to do things that they feel make a lot of good sense. And so when I was invited to be here this afternoon, I thought I'd mention two or three things. One, we live in a great big world. And much of what we talk about now is as a result of the outcome of one of our elections. And, of course, being a Democrat, I always say we made some mistakes. And I say to my friends who are Democrats, especially especially those who operate, that had we shifted $3 or $4 million during the election, Hillary would be president and not President Trump. I tell them that if we put $1 million on the ground in Philadelphia, $1 million on the ground in Milwaukee, $1 million on the ground in Detroit, that in all likelihood, we'd be talking about President Clinton and not President Trump. And I say to those individuals who tell me that they are amazed at some of the policies that are emanating from the White House, and I ask them why they are amazed. And, you know, that's all you got to do is remember the fable of the snake. You know, the lady was on her way to work one morning. She saw this snake laying half dead. It was a Chicago winter, and so she gathered the snake up, took it home, put it by the fireplace, and put some milk out for us. If we got revived. She hurried home from work, and when she hurried home from work, she ran in, grabbed the snake, and pulled it up to her bosom, and the snake bit her. And she says, "You ungrateful snake, after I brought you in and saved you." The snake says, "What are you talking about?" She said, "Well, you ungrateful snake." He says, "Madam, all I ask you to do is just remember, I'm a snake." And I do what snakes do. that. So don't expect me to be different, because I'm not. But I think the unfortunate thing is that as a result of efforts to change policies and directions, that some of the folks in this room that I've known since the 1960s have been struggling to bring about, struggling to change. We've made a lot of progress in this country in a lot of different ways. And one of those has been in health care. I've been working in health care now since the 1960s, late 1960s. And I remember when Medicare and Medicaid got passed. And I remember that most of the people that I personally knew had not had any way to get health care at all. I grew up in this Parkdale, population 267. That's 267. And there was one physician in the whole county, Dr. Crandall. As a matter of fact, he reminded you of Doc Adams on Gunsmoke. Only difference was he had a Model T and not a buckboard. The hat he wore looked like Doc Adams' hat, the bag he carried. And he was the one physician in that county. And when somebody got sick in the community where I lived, he'd come out and look after them, and they might give him a couple dozen eggs. They give him a shoulder if you had something real tough. But most people didn't have anything, and so they didn't get anything, and so they died early. That was the difference. We've seen a tremendous improvement in the length of life. Life expectancy now, for some groups, is around 90 years. That time, nobody. 90? 55? 50 whatever. And so people struggle to improve health care because they knew if they did, they would improve the quality of life. And now we come along and somebody tells us that the 20-plus million people who now have health insurance who had never had it before ought not have it. That somehow or another we ought to take that away. And we should shift the burden of paying for it back to the taxpayers of Cook County, Dr. Shannon, so that Cook County has a mandate to provide health care for the medically indigent. That's part of our, I mean, we've had something that other people in many places throughout the United States don't have. And that is, didn't matter how poor you were in Cook County, you could always get to county hospital. But I remember when you'd have to wait a day and a half to see a doctor. And then after that, somebody come and tell you the doctor ain't there. Well, you don't have to do that now. No, you don't. And you get good, solid, top-level health care, no matter what your status is in Cook County when you go there. But there are those who would like to take that away. I am reminded every day of the deterioration of quality of life in our city. Saturday, I was out at a press conference with a group of people in the Austin community because Friday, five people had gotten shot at Austin and Lake. One died. And another press conference, other though than raising awarenesses, press conferences aren't really doing any good because that's not what people really need. What they need is a way to reduce poverty in the environment of which they are a part. And I don't care if you have a press conference every day and you talk about what the needs are, but if you don't do anything about them, it's like trying to get blood from a turnip. I've discovered that the only thing that you can get from a turnip is turnip juice. You can squeeze it, you can tease it, you can period, you can do whatever you want to do, but at the end of time, the only product is turnip juice. And somehow or another, I mean, we just finished Black History Month back in February, and of course, my absolute black hero in terms of philosophical approaches to solving problems, fellow named Frederick Douglass. And Douglass was fond of saying things. He used to say that there are those amongst us who would profess a love for freedom, but yet deprecate agitation. And he'd say, when we do that, it means that we want the rain without the thunder and the lightning. Or we want the crops without first plowing up the ground. He went on to say that he knew one thing if he didn't know anything else, and that is that in this world, you may not get everything that you pay for, but you most certainly will pay for everything that you get. And if you don't pay one way, you will pay another way. And that is a reality. if we don't find a way to reduce poverty, all of these inner city areas where most of the violence is occurring, they all have one thing in common. They are poverty stricken. Kids have grown up without the benefit of all the things that individuals need to be civilized and to be educated. We are becoming more and more of a highly technological society. Almost anything that we need to do, it can be done by technological advances or automation. I have seen robots, Rob, in hospitals operating and helping operate on patients. I mean, if you want to see some, go in the observation deck and see robots taking care of individuals' health needs. Just imagine. I have a friend who's had two heart transplants and a kidney transplant, and he has two jobs that he works every week. He owns a construction company, and he's also a minister. I see some of the folks here from the Gift of Hope that I know well, and I'm amazed at the work that they are able to do. And they've even come up with the idea that we might be not using some organs that are transplantable, and they're working to say, let's change the standards. And we've met with them and CMS and folks. Say we're throwing away some of these kidneys that we might be able to use. And CMS thought that they had so much of a possibility. I remember once we had a full day's meeting that lasted all day with their scientists and with the other scientists. But still we are not in a position to say that across the board, we talk about inequality. We talk about how do we make the world more equal. Frederick Douglass had the answer. You ain't going to do it without paying to do it. I was reading something the other day that suggested that there were eight conglomerates in the world that controlled as much of the world's wealth as 50% of all the poorest people in the world. Can you imagine that we have not reached a point yet, all these things that we know? And I must confess that when I come downtown, sometimes the fellows who are riding with me actually count the number of black people that they see in downtown Chicago, where there are a lot of jobs. And yet 50% of all the young African-American males in this city don't have a job, don't go to school, not in school, not in training, not doing anything other than shooting each other and selling drugs. The group between 18 and 24, it is tough. It is amazing, quite frankly. And yet, we cannot afford to throw up our hands. Yeah, I sit on the Ways and Means Committee, and let me tell you, after all is said and done, more is generally said than done. And somehow or another, it seems as though in some places in our world and in our society, the way people are behaving, it reminds me of the song that the Righteous Brothers used to sing. And the lyrics went kind of like this. They say, "You never close your eyes anymore when I kiss your lips. No tenderness do I feel in your fingertips. Baby, you're trying hard not to show it, but you've lost that loving, loving feeling. And now it's gone, 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 you know?" And somehow or another, I don't know how we do it, but somehow or another, we've got to figure out a way. You know, and I appreciate all of the individuals who have expressed their personal condolences to me relative to the tragedy that my grandson faced, and then, of course, the death of my son. But one of the things that my son had asked me after my grandson's funeral, I had said that I had as much feeling of empathy for the kids who pulled the trigger because they were going to miss Thanksgiving dinner with their families, that their families were going to experience pain and frustration. And so Stacy and I were in the car. He said, "Dad, say, can I ask you something?" Just man to man. Father to son. I said, "Yeah, go ahead." He said, "Did you really mean that when you when you said that you felt bad for the kids that killed Javon?" I say, "Yes, Stacy, I did mean it. And I mean it because we can't just be concerned about ourselves, that we have to be concerned about the world. We are, as Dr. Martin Luther King was fond of saying, inextricably bound. And he said that I can never be all that I have the potential of being unless all of us can fulfill those kind of potentials. So I'd love to see government be the purveyor of that kind of feeling. I'd like to see government, I thought when you got into government you were going to be able to develop all these programs, and now all we talk about is the money that we don't have. There are basically two kind of people, I think, in the world. There are those who shape and mold society. Then there are those who are shaped and molded by society. And one of the questions that we keep asking is, am I a molder or am I a moldy? Am I helping to shape and mold, or am I following along with society, knowing that the decisions that we make are not those that are going to make the world a better place in which to live? It's hard to convey. You know, the other day when we bombed Syria, or shot missiles, and I'm saying, was there any other way to do this? Is there any diplomacy left that could have been used? Is there any approaches that could be better? And so I think that we have to keep seeking, keep looking, keep hoping, keep trying. I do a lot of work trying to get individuals who've been to prison back into normal life. And some of the places that I go and some of the people that I talk to, they says right on. Except not in my backyard. I go to churches who wouldn't hire an ex-offender because they're afraid they're going to steal the Bible without knowing that they can't read no way. And even if they got the Bible, they couldn't do anything with it. So I guess all that I'm really saying and all that, obviously, there are individuals in this room that I could point to. Oh, my God. that have just given so much of themselves in so many ways. I see people like Betty Lou Salzman and said, no doubt, honest to Pete, yeah. Yes, indeed. I see people who for all these years that I have known them, Martha Jantha, Martha, we haven't seen each other in years. People who make the greatest use of themselves in such a way that they become a benefit and an asset to society. So I end my little conversation. I like these people who know me know that I love poetry. And I got a poem for everything in the world. I don't care what it is. I don't care what it is. I can think of some little poetic thing. And I often use them, especially when I'm talking to young people. And the poet really said what I attempted to say in a few words. I always say that poets were gifted because they could put in a few words what it takes prose writers sometime a whole book. A whole page. But the poet said it this way: I bargained with life for a penny, and life would pay no more. However, I begged at evening time when I counted my scanty store. But I learned that life is a just employer. He gives you what you ask. But once you have set the wages, then you must bear the task. I worked for a menial's hire, only to learn dismayed, whatever price I had asked of life, life would have willingly paid. Whatever you put into it, that is exactly what you get out of it. And whatever you give, you keep giving. I see Lester McKeever. Oh, Lester and his family has meant so much to this city. In addition to being a premier accountant who could count up whatever there is here, he also put a lot of it back into the city. So thank you very much, Ed. And I guess if there's time for questions, all right. Thank
you. Let's everybody give him a round of applause. Whoa. Standing O. So you thought you were coming to hear a congressman. You didn't know we have our own poet laureate. Wonderful. And Congressman Davis mentioned Dr. Shannon, CEO of the Cook County Health and Hospital System. And let me point out, he's down here. On the 8th of May, Dr. Shannon will be our speaker. So make your reservations now. Okay, we've got a number of questions here. This is from Mr. Terry, or maybe Miss Terry. Miss. Okay. She's retired.
All right.
I'm a constituent on the near north side. I would like you to hold a town hall meeting in my area. Crime is not confined to other areas. We have too much crime. So I guess the general question is about crime in the neighborhood and so forth.
Well, let me tell you, please just give us a call, and we would love to work with you to put that town hall. As a matter of fact, some of the people say that I have so many town hall meetings until do we do anything else? But I'm a firm believer that the only safeguard for our democracy is through the engagement of an enlightened citizenry. So please just give us a call. Plus, Nikki is actually here, Nicole Harvey, and we'll get together on that town hall just as quickly as we can arrange it, because I love doing town hall meetings. I also do a television show every Friday, 5:30 on cable access. If I'm in, that's a call in. And I do a radio show from 10 to 12 on Sundays on the old WVON frequency, 1450 AM. That will make you laugh. Sometimes it'll make you cry. Because the guy who kind of I do it with is a roach killer. And so he advertises his business. And he says that when it comes to rats and roaches, big or small, Garfield will kill them all.
So we assume he's talking about four-legged roaches and not some other roaches. Okay.
Bed bugs.
This is from a former Cook County employee, Bob Reamer, who's the president of the Edgewater Historical Society. Any hope for Medicare for all or a single-payer system?
Let me tell you, Bob Reamer and I go back so far to something called, 48? Up in the 48th Ward.
48th Ward. He was the committeeman once.
Yeah, and he was the committeeman up there, but he's also a health care executive. And he was that even then, but a premier activists. Bob, I think that there, if you think about where we come from, and we come by having hope and faith. I mean, if you would have told people that we'd have the kind of health care delivery system that we have in Cook County, 40 years ago, when Quentin Young and other folks like him were pushing and promoting. So I always say that I remain optimistic. But, of course, hope means that you not only have to keep hoping. I grew up on a farm, and my brother and I would sometimes try to trick our daddy, and when things didn't appear to be doing well, we'd say, Daddy, the Lord is going to make the crops this year, and we're going to be all right. We're going to clear some money. He said, yeah, I want you boys to pray for a good harvest, but keep on hoeing.
And so
we have to work and keep on hoping. If somebody had told me that I'd be a member of Congress then, I probably, there wasn't a single black person elected to anything anywhere close to where I lived. when I was growing up. As a matter of fact, the only guy, even when I went to college, who would talk about blacks being elected happened to end up being, his name was Henry Wilkins, but Rodney Slater married his daughter. So he was Rodney Slater's father-in-law. Of course, he had died by then. But people would never have thought. And if you tell people that there were about as many black members of Congress before 1900 as we currently have, that there were two black senators from Mississippi, Hiram Revels and B.K. Bruce. There was a black governor of Louisiana, a guy named A.A. Pincher Pinchback. He didn't serve no longer than David Orr served as mayor. But
David's not here to, you know.
David is my dear friend. He and I broke into this business at the same time.
We have a question here from Susan Simonson with Lydia Healthcare. How do you feel about Mayor Emanuel's suggestion to require Chicago Public School seniors to have a plan before they get their diploma?
Of course, you know, you also got to have a school.
That answers that.
You know. Well, you know. Let me tell you. Abraham Lincoln said something about education. Abraham Lincoln used to say that education makes a man easy to lead, but difficult to drive. Easy to govern, but impossible to enslave. If people are educated, they will know what they need.
This is from Brian Israel, who's with the River North Residents Association. I don't think that's in your district, but I'm not, maybe
no,
wrong.
No, it's not, but I know.
Okay. Having lost around 1,000 legislative seats during President Obama's administration, what can and should Democrats do to regain political influence at local, state, and national levels?
Organize, educate. We just finished electing new leadership for the DNC. And everybody that ran during their campaign said that was what they figured we needed to do. We need young Democrats. Chicago has very few young Democrats. And we need to help people to understand that politics is about more than you scratch my back and I scratch yours. That politics is the lifeblood of democracy, and without it, there could be no democracy.
Thank you. This is from Lauren Tucker, who's with the Invisible Printers Row. She must have her own cheering section.
Yeah.
She writes awfully fast, shot me about 10 questions. We have a quota here. What is the best way for Indivisible Chicago, Indivisible Printers Row, South Loop to help you resist the Republican agenda?
Well, best way is to be aware, to share your thoughts and ideas. You know, every piece of legislation that comes up started somewhere. I'm saying don't ever have the idea of can't. Every bill that I've ever gotten passed, and fortunately I have managed to get some passed, and they are meaningful. Give your thoughts and ideas. It might be to the alderman if you've got some ideas for what they do. might be the state rep or the state senator or county commissioner, or it could be us. We developed two bills out of meetings that actually became legislation. One, at one of our town hall meetings, we called a district town hall. HIV/AIDS activists were there, and they were complaining that the small organizations didn't get the same play in terms of budget that the large ones got. So they came up with a red ribbon ticket idea. We took it to two state senators and representatives, Senator Collins in the Senate, Jackie Collins, and Karen Yarbrough in the House. They took that and got it passed in the state legislature. Then the governor vetoed it. And I happen to have known a fellow named Cross, who was the Republican leader. And I went and talked to Tom Cross. And Tom, I said, we need some Republican votes to override the governor's veto. And he gave them to us. Now they get money every year off the sale of this lottery ticket if their organizations have a budget of less than $100,000. That money goes to them.
And by the way, Tom Cross is a member of the City Club and one of our speakers. So we don't want you to think you're just at a Democratic ward meeting here.
That's right. He's a Republican, was a Republican leader in the House.
This is from Dave Stanford. How has communication with constituents changed in your time in Congress?
Well, you know, a lot of people now, technology is so great. When I first went to Congress, I developed a newsletter. And we had enough money for me to mail it to every constituent, every household in my district. Of course, we no longer do that because of the cuts that have taken place. But the other main way, some people have electronic town halls, where they just invite a whole bunch of folks to be online, and they get 800-900, some get 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. We're in the information age. And if you don't provide information to people, they create their own. And that's where rumor and other kinds of things, I learned that when I was studying management.
Is that what they call alternative facts?
Yeah, there you go. But if you provide the information, then people actually know. And they can evaluate you even. I mean, if they don't know certain things, they don't know how to evaluate their representation. And so information is absolutely essential. You can't do without it. And it has put more people in the game. But we still have millions of people who don't register to vote. We have millions of people who don't vote. We have millions of people who don't participate because they can't see where they fit in this great big megalopolis of things. And so you need to help people know that their participation is invaluable. I tell people the only way I can represent them is that they know what I do and what I don't do. Then they can evaluate me to determine whether or not, and if I'm not representing them, then they ought to, you know, get somebody who will.
Thank you. Okay, we have just a few more questions we have time for. This is from, I think it's Thor Peterson. He's with the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. Can you tell us a bit about the Trauma Informal Care for Children and Families Act and its prospects in Congress?
Well, I thank you very much for that question, because Senator Durbin and I introduced, he in the Senate and I in the House, and we announced it out at the University of Chicago about two, three Sundays ago. And we had about 50 or 60 organizations who were there in support of it. We think that it has a good chance. Now, you got to understand, a lot of ways to skin a cat. Sometimes you make sure that the majority has somebody helping to push whatever it is that you're trying to get passed, because these elections really determine a lot of things. And if you don't have somebody on the majority side, for example, I always have myself a Republican. I'm saying, and I always find somebody. The former coach of Nebraska, who used to win all those championships, Coach Osborne, he and I introduced a bill and managed to get it passed because we both observed in committee that we often kind of agreed on things. And so we introduced something called the Campus Care Counseling Act. But what happened was three members of Congress had children who committed suicide that year, and that helped drive the bill. It was a bill to give some more money to colleges and universities for their counseling of students who were having difficulty. He and I managed to get it passed. Dr. Burgess is my co from Texas and is actually the chairman of the Health Subcommittee in Energy and Commerce, and he's my co-sponsor of the Sickle Cell Education Act, and we expect to get that renewed. We got it passed already, but it's up for reauthorization, and we expect to do it. We got to know each other, really, on a trip to Cuba. And at the end of the trip, I said to him, you know, the best thing about this trip was I got to know you. And so we have a relationship, and Democrat, Republican, notwithstanding, we still have a relationship, and we'll get it done.
Great. We have time for one last question. I apologize to the other questions that came up here, but if the congressman has a chance afterwards, maybe you could come up and ask him. This is from City Club member Steve Shucker. If you had 1 year as president of this country, what would be the three things you would focus on that our current commander-in-chief seems to neglect?
You know, it would take somebody like Steve to ask a question like that. You know, I knew Steve's father, I know his mother, and I've known Steve, and I think, Steve, I would put as much emphasis as I could on education, because education just opens up avenues for people. And if we had optimal opportunity for individuals to be educated, then I think they can figure out how to manipulate to their benefit the society of which they are indeed a part. Health is wealth. Let me tell you, I don't know anything that's more important. I mean, you can have all the money in the world, you can have all the prestige you can get, you can be as handsome as you can become, or you could be the best-looking woman in the world, but if you are sick and don't feel good and can't function and you don't have any hope of being well, then life, you know, not only is it no crystal stair, but it's going to keep having tacks and holes in it. So health, and the other thing would be to try and make use of government to help create work opportunities so that everybody have a shot at a job. If you can't work, you don't have a job, you have no hope. You have no future. Your percentage of self-worth diminishes if you can't feel that you are contributing some way to the furtherance of the society of which you are part. So, Steve, those are the three things that I would put at the top of the list.